This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, July 10th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, you may have seen or heard him during last year's Fayetteville Roots Festival, Joe Crookston. He's back in Fayetteville for a few days with a variety of special events at the Fayetteville Public Library, and he'll stop by the Carver Center for Public Radio to discuss his song Blue Tattoo, which inspired a documentary of the same name.
And the world-renowned architect of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, Moshe Softy, pays a visit to his design to discuss this and other projects. An exhibit of his work will be on display inside his work through September. And have you ever noticed the building on the Fayetteville Square that displays the name Mrs. Young? We'll take a stroll around downtown and meet Sarah Jesse Young.
But first, several members of Arkansas's business and agricultural communities are championing a new poll they say shows two-thirds of Arkansas voters support some kind of immigration reform. The poll's release is part of a National Day of Action observed yesterday in favor of immigration reform. According to the poll, 66% of Arkansas voters are in favor of granting legal status of some kind to some immigrants living illegally in the country. The poll was conducted in 26 states by Harper Polling. Marvin Childers of the Arkansas Poultry Federation says the overwhelming number of Arkansans polled say the immigration system needs fixing.
Not only do 88% of the people think that, you know, it needs to be fixed, 83% of the folks think that it should be fixed this year. It's an immediate issue.
He made the comments during a teleconference yesterday. During the same teleconference, Randy Zook with the Arkansas Chamber of Commerce said many Arkansas businesses are unable to find enough willing candidates to do work.
The Arkansas Secretary of State's office says a proposal to make alcohol sales legal in all 75 Arkansas counties does have enough signatures to be placed in front of voters in November. Now, the Secretary of State's office will inspect the signatures to make sure enough are valid. That process is expected to take several days.
A Siloam Springs business mainstay is changing its name, effective immediately. Allen's Canned Vegetables will be known as Sager Creek Vegetable Company. Sager Creek runs through the city of Siloam Springs, where the former Allen's Canning Company had been headquartered since the 1920s. Certain products owned by the newly named company, like Popeye spinach, will remain the same.
The American Red Cross is operating an emergency shelter for families displaced by flooding in East Arkansas. The situation was worsened by additional rain that hit the area Tuesday night. This week, Governor Mike Beebe toured the area by boat and says he's waiting to hear back on his request for a federal emergency declaration.
We've got it in to the feds, so we'll just have to wait and see. They have to do assessments, and that's going on as we speak. Over and above the farmers flooding, though, what was really sad was there weren't a lot of them, but 20, 25 houses that are uninhabitable because of flooding in the Brinkley area. And you know those folks didn't have flood insurance.
Officials say it will take several days of dry weather before people can return to some areas.
That's so sad to see that kind of damage, particularly in areas where you doubt whether or not there's sufficient insurance coverage available. And you don't know what federal programs would exist because a lot of those things are based upon numbers, huge numbers. And so even though it's not a lot of folks, to the folks that are hit, it's devastating and terrible.
The declaration would cover 10 counties and allow farmers in East Arkansas to apply for emergency loans through the Farm Service Agency.
Another day, another poll released in Arkansas's United States Senate race. This poll, conducted by Impact Management Group, shows Congressman Tom Cotton with a narrow lead over incumbent Mark Pryor, 47-43%. According to the poll, 10% of respondents say they're unsure who they would vote for in November. Clint Reed, a partner at the polling firm, told thecitywire.com that the poll shows a bias toward Republican candidates in the fall.
Mercy Hospital is receiving high marks for technology. Mercy was named by the American Hospital Association as one of the most wired in the country. It is the 11th time in 16 years Mercy has earned the honor. Mercy says its commitment to analytical tools and other efforts helped it be named to the list, along with Kaiser Permanente, Mayo Clinic, and Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
A former aide to Governor Mike Beebe will serve a 7-year term on the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. At the announcement yesterday, Governor Beebe said Andrew Parker has an ideal background for serving on the panel.
A love for the outdoors, an understanding that hunting and fishing in Arkansas is a major pastime, a major educational experience, a major family experience, a major economic engine, a corollary with the tourism that is so important for our state.
Parker, who spent 3 years as the governor's liaison to the commission, said outdoor activities are extremely important for families.
Hunting and fishing aren't just recreational sports. There's something more than that, and there's something that kids all across Arkansas, no matter where they live, should have the opportunity to experience. The 600 and more people that work at the Game and Fish know this. They work daily to ensure that people of all ages and backgrounds have the opportunity to experience all the adventure that the outdoors has to offer.
Parker, who is Director of Government Affairs for the State Chamber of Commerce, replaces Commissioner Ty Patterson of Texarkana.
A forum dedicated to a proposed 1% sales tax in Alma will be held tonight. It is the first of two such public hearings in the Alma Community Building. City officials say if the tax is passed, it will not go into effect until a current 1% sales tax ends. Voters in Alma rejected a proposed 1% sales tax this spring.
A writer with a degree from the University of Arkansas is up for a major entertainment industry award. Nick Pizzolatto is nominated for an Emmy for Best Writing for a Drama Series for his work creating the HBO series True Detective. The series earned several other nominations this morning in major categories. Pizzolatto earned his Master's of Fine Arts degree at the U of A.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will play in Springfield again tonight after dropping a 4-1 decision to the Cardinals last night. The Naturals remain in first place in the Texas League North standings, a game ahead of the Arkansas Travelers.
Cloudy tonight, lows in the lower 70s throughout the region. There is a 30% chance of rain tonight for much of the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny and hot tomorrow, highs from 90 to 94. Tomorrow night, clear, lows in the lower 70s.
This is Ozarks at Large. As Mike Beebe's time as governor of Arkansas is winding down, the race for that office is heating up. Yesterday, we heard a conversation between Roby Brock with our content partner, Talk Business and Politics, and Republican Asa Hutchinson. Now we hear from his opponent in the race, Democrat Mike Ross, who highlights his plan for jobs, the economy, and universal pre-K if elected governor of the state.
A lot of talk about pre-K, K through 12, higher education, there's tax cuts, there's government efficiency, there's obviously some big economic development components in there. Let's start with this pre-K debate. This has been a big plank for you in here. You're looking at potentially 8 years to fully implement what you want to do in pre-K. What do you do in the interim with those folks that aren't going to be in that window of inclusion and are already in the public school system, the education system, and looking for jobs?
Well, I think I've said I want to be the education governor. Whether you want to talk about poverty issues, hunger issues, crime issues, prison overcrowding issues, more better paying jobs, quality of life issues, healthcare issues, it all starts with education. And I think we have to have a long-term and a short-term approach to it. I think a lot of times politicians or policymakers or legislators, even governors and presidents, I mean, I think there is a desire to come up with a plan that can be implemented within a year or two so you can then take credit for it and run for re-election on it.
Right.
And, you know, it's not unique just to Arkansas, but in Arkansas, we've made a lot of progress in education, but we're 49th in America in terms of adults with a college degree. So part of this plan is something that I may never get credit for, and that's okay though if we can change Arkansas' standing in America and in the world as it relates to education.
What's the most immediate thing you could do as governor to cause some sort of paradigm shift? What you're talking about doing with pre-K is obviously a long-term, a generational challenge that we've talked about. What's the one thing you could do on day one to flip the switch and start improving the situation from where it is now?
I think you look at 100 ninth graders, 20 of them aren't going to finish high school. 40 of them is going to go to college. Only 20 is going to graduate college. We're 49th in America in terms of adults with a college degree. We can do better. We must do better. But what about the other 80? a lot of young people today, they feel like we look down upon them if they do not go to college. They feel like they've got three options: college, military, minimum wage. Well, there's a fourth option out there. I still call it BoTech, but career and technical training. We've got great community colleges. We've got some good technical schools. We need greater partnerships between K through 12, community colleges, technical schools, and existing industry, so that these young people who do not choose to go to college, they can learn a skill, they can learn a trade, get a certification, and get a good paying job. And in doing so, it helps provide our state with that educated, trained, and skilled workforce we need to attract the good paying jobs of today and tomorrow.
Let's talk about tax cuts, because this is another centerpiece of your jobs plan. You've talked about realigning, modernizing the state income tax code, also a manufacturer's tax cut. All told, that's a little over $610 million, and if you did it all at once, which I know you've advocated kind of sliding into a lot of that. How did you come to the decision on modernizing the state income tax code? Did you consider some other tax variables, tax cut variables?
We looked at a lot of things, but I think it's about bringing lower fair taxes to the hardworking folks in this state, creating a more competitive business environment in this state. Look, we've got six state income tax rates in Arkansas, and yet 60% of the folks are in the top two rates. One out of every three is in the top rate. Really? I mean, and so there's huge discrepancies. The top rate starts at $34,000 a year. So a single mom working two jobs to try and make ends meet, earning $34,000 a year, is paying the same state income tax rate as someone making $340,000 a year, or someone making $3.4 million a year. There's nothing fair about it, and I want to fix it and get it back to what was envisioned when the legislature created these brackets and these rates back in 1971, because what happened for 25 years, they didn't index the income for inflation. So in 1971, when these brackets and these rates were established, the median household income in Arkansas was $8,000 a year, and folks were paying about 4% state income tax. Today, the median household income still way too low, $40,000 a year, and yet it throws them in the top bracket, because for 25 years we didn't index those brackets for inflation. And then the manufacturing, taking the sales tax off manufacturing parts, replacement parts and repairs. Look, I know it doesn't sound real sexy probably, but it is so important. I've been doing economic development all my life. This is the number one tax reform proposal recommended by the state Chamber of Commerce. And here's why it's important. Surrounding states do not charge that sales tax. And as a result, it puts us in a very non-competitive situation. I've been involved in retaining Cooper Tire, and I was very involved in retaining Cooper Tire in Texarkana, Firestone Building Products in my hometown in Prescott. You know, when the economy gets sluggish, industry, they have to decide which plant to close. Oftentimes, they close the plant that is least modernized. And we spend all this money trying to get industry to locate here. But then we tell them over the years, we want you to continue to modernize, but if you do, we're gonna tax you. And so, you know, a plant that's been here for 20 years, putting people to work, if they need to replace a part or modernize their plant to ensure they're here long-term,
they're paying sales tax we're on paying, it, another state's
we're
not.
Paying sales right. tax on it. They're not in other states. A new industry that comes in, by the way, who hadn't been putting people to work for 20 years, they don't pay sales tax on the same equipment.
Did you ever consider or contemplate cutting the corporate income tax? That is a smaller dollar figure in terms of your an overall tax budget. It's about $400 million a year. It's a volatile income category, as you well know from your years in the state Senate. And it would send a signal that Arkansas is open for business if there is no corporate income tax right here. Did you give that any thought or consideration?
I did, and I'm interested in hopefully being able to pursue something on that. I know some states basically say no corporate income tax for the first 10 years if you bring your business and make an investment and put people to work in your state. I think that's something that we should look at as well, because it's not going to reduce revenue, because that's revenue we currently do not have. But
you're talking about extending it to new industry that might locate here.
I think it's something we should look at. I'd like to talk to the legislature about it and work with Democrats and Republicans in a bipartisan way to see if we can't do something. You know, the bottom line is this: this is not Washington. Money doesn't grow on trees. We don't print money. We don't deficit spend. We've got to have a balanced budget first. We need to fund education, Medicaid, public safety. And then as we have revenue growth, I want to do some of these things exactly the same way that Governor Beebe took the sales tax off groceries. It's actually a 12-year process. We're seven and a half years into it. 80% of the sales tax on groceries is now gone. He wasn't able to do it all in year one in a fiscally responsible way. He's done it the correct way. And I want to do this the correct way. And I think the first thing you got to do is bring fairness to the state income tax code for working families in Arkansas. And again, it's just not right that the top rate in Arkansas starts at $34,000 a year.
That was gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross speaking with Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business and Politics. That conversation originally aired on KATV in Central Arkansas this past Sunday morning. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
In about 35 minutes on OAL, we learn the inspiration behind the song and film Blue Tattoo. She was a friend named Dina.
She was Polish. She was in Auschwitz for 3 years. She traveled across the Atlantic on a boat with her four-year-old daughter, or with her daughter, I should say, young daughter. And they relocated to Elmira, New York. And the song is really, I wrote it for her, and it's a conversation between Connie, her daughter, and maybe Connie's 4 years old, and Dina is maybe 28 years old. And the four-year-old is asking questions of her mother, saying, "Tell me about your life, Mom."
Social archaeologist, singer, and songwriter Joe Crookston stops by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. That's ahead on Ozarks.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Would you give an 11-year-old the job of baking your wedding cake? Well, one bride did, and the 11-year-old was more than happy to accept.
I wasn't as nervous as my parents were. They were, like, freaking out, and I was like, oh, it's okay, I'll finish it on time.
We'll taste some of her work next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen today from 1 to 3 to KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. If you want to understand why the exhibit of Moshe Safdie's work at Crystal Bridges Museum of Art is titled Global Citizen, all you have to do is consider the projects he's currently working on. Projects in Singapore, Chongqing, China, Istanbul, Australia, a hospital in Colombia, the headquarters for the Department of Antiquities in Jerusalem, and a new design for the School of Music on the campus of Texas Christian University. These projects will be added to a list of works from Montreal to Los Angeles, from Tel Aviv to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Last month, the architect, author, and educator came back to the museum to deliver a pair of talks and to stroll around the museum to look at the exhibit of his models, his drawings, and his work. It was a Wednesday afternoon at Crystal Bridges when Moshe Safdie met a small group to walk them through the exhibition Global Citizen, the architecture of Moshe Safdie. He would stop at some to discuss the theory behind the design or to tell an interesting anecdote, including the work he was walking in, Crystal Bridges.
I think the big moments in this building were the decision to build on the site, the decision to build in the creek and not on the top of the hill, to do a building that's in the drainage stream, the decision to create the ponds. I think thereafter was a period in which the language or the vocabulary of the building in terms of the wood construction, the concrete construction, evolved. But it really was a process where we worked with the site. I mean, we made a model of the site, and we were fitting buildings into the land, and really the land drove the process.
He calls the formation of the museum and its grounds intense. He says there were passionate discussions. The process included travel to other museums and other gardens. As he stands in the lobby and gazes at the surroundings and all the people, he says the process worked.
And looking back now, I'm just seeing the public's kind of embrace of the place, and I'll use the word guardedly, but I do feel the public has embraced the place. It's very satisfying and makes me think of the days where everybody said, you can't build this in Arkansas, they won't know how to put it together. Well, they did, and everybody feels good about it.
One of those very passionate discussions about the appearance of the museum during its creation is visible to everybody who comes there. A massive, gray, round end of a cable that holds the bridge building up.
And, you know, we are, as architects, we just marvel at those things. And so you see that there's a metal frame around it. That's because everybody insisted that it should be covered. It's unsightly. So we had it covered. But I begged to have it exposed temporarily, at least. And it's
now
it's settled. It's framed. So, but I think it's so beautiful to be able to feel the express. I mean, if you stand here, you don't quite understand. But if you stand at an angle where you see the cable coming through, it's actually like the buttress of a suspension bridge.
One of the enlightening things about the Global Citizen Exhibition is the ability for the layperson to see both the intricate details of a world-renowned work and the sketches and to-scale models that allow a visitor to see the entire project. There is a model of Crystal Bridges, and beside it, a model of the Skirball Cultural Center in Los Angeles, a multi-building complex that Moshe Safdie says is appropriately placed next to the Crystal Bridges model.
Because the connection between them is that it was Alice's visit to the Skirball that led us to selecting us. And I think what was interesting about Skirball, she was sent there, recommended to go there by the Huntington Library people in Pasadena. And she was describing that she was after, she wanted to build a museum which was a place of community and as much a place of social gathering as a place for art. And they said, oh, in that case, go to the Skirball.
Skirball's Southern California campus shares more than just an intent to bring community together with Crystal Bridges. Like the Bentonville Museum, it was placed in a tight spot, one prone to mudslides. Softy's career is loaded with projects that didn't take the easy or expected route. Habitat 67, a housing community in Montreal, remains one of the most recognizable developments in Canada. The 12-story complex features blocks jutting out in every conceivable fashion and direction. Each of the more than 350 units is connected to its own private terrace. The current exhibition at Crystal Bridges includes the first ever model that inspired Habitat, which happens to be Moshe Safdie's thesis. There is also the NBC News report on the opening of Habitat.
It's on Mackay Pier, close to the city. There are 158 private houses, 1 to 4 bedrooms, in this extraordinary complex. It looks like a Pueblo village in modern dress.
And it is a similar model of a prefabricated housing complex that sits beside Moshe Safdie on the cover of the April 19, 1971 issue of Newsweek under the headline, The Shape of Things to Come. He did design similar complexes, though none of them were ever built. But Habitat's revolutionary design does play an influential role in modern living, as shown in two of the original bathrooms from Habitat at the exhibition at Crystal Bridges.
Fiberglass, all molded, in two pieces bolted in the center, with the sinks and the counter and the medicine cabinet and the bathtub, all integral single. Inspired by Bucky's Fuller metal bathroom for Domaxian House, but taken into the next step of technology.
Softie and his team worked with Frigidaire to create the first ever stackable washer and dryer for Habitat. That sort of collaboration is important to him. He says as his career has continued, the concept of a team has become even more important. A successful project needs engineers, designers, craftspeople, stonemasons, and landscapers. These are complex buildings, he says, and architecture has changed.
And I feel that one of the major changes is we are now kind of not just composers, but like conductors, because it's the world of experts out there that makes our buildings happen.
which was not true 100 years ago, even 50 years ago. Even, you know, one basically had possession of those skills. You know, the sort of master builder architect knew what it took to put a building together. Well, we haven't got a clue on our own.
And of course, the client is a partner. Softee points to the drawings of the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa as an example of how a client's wish led to innovation. Softee's design includes many skylights that let sunlight spread onto the second floor, where the European and American collections of art are situated. But the director of the gallery at the time it was being built complained that the first floor gallery, where the Canadian art was located, didn't receive that sunlight. So Softee developed light shafts lined with mylar that now carry daylight throughout the building. Other times, cooperation wasn't enough. Either finances, politics, or a combination of both scuttled a project. That's an occupational hazard of being an architect. Even when a building is finished, there can be criticism. His work on Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, Israel's official memorial to Jewish victims of the Holocaust, culminates with visitors in a wide open space overlooking nearby mountains.
So there's a kind of a life prevailed, which was very controversial when we proposed it. Subject of endless debate and whether it was appropriate, excessively optimistic, political statement, all of the above, but it works.
Whether creating the Vancouver Library Square, a chapel at Harvard Business School, or the Hebrew College campus in Newton, Massachusetts, Moshe Softee wants community to be relevant. He designed the Ben-Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv so arriving and departing passengers would, if only for a moment, be at the same point, passing each other. The Kauffman Performing Arts Center in Kansas City has more than one performance venue, but just one common lobby, so people attending classical and country concerts on the same night will possibly share the same space at the same time.
The idea there was that you want to reach out to the whole population, and you're going to get different venues, and opera will not draw what a rock concert will, and it's nice to see that mix. And that's why we wanted to have one lobby, one space. You know, I think you see a bit of it here. You see a big mix of population here, and it's actually heartwarming to see people that you're not sure would end up in a museum normally coming and enjoying it.
Like his visit to Crystal Bridges last month, Softee tries to get to his finished buildings as often as possible to see how people use the spaces and how those spaces evolve.
I make a point. I mean, I'd say I try and get there every year. Not all of them I manage to do, but like, I hadn't been to the Quebec Museum of Civilization for maybe 10 years. I went in now for the 25th anniversary. So, and actually I was sad that I stayed away. They'd done a few things I would have try to advise about. But I think if you feel, I mean, I continue feeling not only possessiveness, but kind of interest in how it works, and things change for buildings. Program changes, needs change. The Skirbo, for example, won't change a thing without calling me. And they say, oh, well, we want to convert this, we want to a new food facility or whatever it is. So airports tend to ignore you and slowly destroy the building, but I guess it's in the nature of things. They put advertising in the most sensitive places just because somebody offered them that. But I try and stay involved.
Near the end of his tour in Bentonville, he sat inside the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges and was asked why, at the beginning of that afternoon, he had called this museum a happy place.
People just smile in this place, you know, and when we opened, at the opening, everybody was so happy, you know. So that's when I thought this is a really happy building. And I think being a happy building also has to do something with what it did to Bentonville and the region, that the people here were so happy to receive this, you know, so grateful and appreciative. You know, I mean, I think if this would not have been in New York, because we don't have a site like that in New York. But in New York, people were sort of this, a little cynical, a little this, a little that. But this was so embraced. As I said earlier, embraced. I think it is a happy building. I think it's a building about joy and cheerfulness. And there's very little that oppresses you here or sort of intimidates you.
Moshe Safdie visited Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in late June. The exhibition, Global Citizen, The Architecture of Moshe Safdie, will remain at the museum until September 1st.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a moment, we learn about the woman whose name decorates a building on the Fayetteville Square, Mrs. Young.
But first, Crystal Bridges' inaugural short film festival will focus on uniting the power of art and nature. Deadline to submit a film is July 15th, and the museum will host the festival screening August 22nd. Any age can submit a film. Entry categories are artistic, animation, narrative, and documentary. Shorts must be a minimum of 90 seconds long and a maximum of 15 minutes. Seedling Film Association is collaborating with the museum on film selections. More information is available at crystalbridges.org/education/filmfest.
The public is invited to attend an informal gathering to review the current draft of the Siloam Springs Downtown and Connectivity Master Plan and provide some feedback during a drop-in public draft review meeting that will take place Tuesday night. It's actually from 4 until 6 in the afternoon. It's in the Arvest Community Room downtown. That's at 109 East University Street.
And it is time once again for an Ozarks at Large giveaway.
Oh, man. Boy, do we have some stuff to give away.
Right. One package.
We'll have one winner. You get 4 tickets to a future Northwest Arkansas Naturals game. They're vouchers that you take to that game. As long as it's not sold out, they will give you tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You get 4 passes to any area Malco movie theater.
Yes.
You also get 4 passes to the Sharknado Riff Tracks event. Now, there's one tonight. These are not for that one.
No, this is for July 15th.
Right. And if you've ever seen Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's those robots, it's those guys cracking wise about a bad movie, which mm-hmm. I have seen Sharknado, fits the bill.
All right.
So you get 4 of each of those. Okay. And then, but wait, there's more. 2 tickets to the Fund Your Farmers 2014 event. This is taking place at the Garden Room, which for years was the Ozark Mountain Smokehouse.
On Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Exactly. It's July 17th, which is a week from tonight. It's from 5 to 7. It's going to have local food tasting plates from 5 local chefs. The chefs from 11, Greenhouse Grill, 28 Springs, Fetro 1925, and the Fayetteville Pastry Shop. Right? You get all that. Plus, live music from the Block Street Hot Club. All taking place at the Garden Room on July 17th, the Fund Your Farmers event 2014. 2 tickets to that.
Just that is worth
$70.
Entering. Yeah.
It's worth $70. So
that's
you've
awesome.
Got 2 tickets to that. I mean, we've got you set up for next week.
Totally, totally. And all you have to do to enter the contest or the drawing is to email us at our email address, ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. We will randomly pick a winner and announce it tomorrow.
You don't have to tell us your favorite song about the rain.
Okay.
But if you want to, go ahead.
All right.
You know.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Just for fun. All right. ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
That's Pat Metheny on the guitar with Joshua Redman on saxophone. Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. We'll hear these fine musicians this Friday on the show, along with Mark Turner, Jimmy Witherspoon, Wallace Roney, Wayne Shorter, and much more. Tune in to Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large. Perhaps the oldest portion of many towns and cities is the town square, the center holding an important building, landmark, or gathering place. In Fayetteville, this is the old post office. Walking down the front steps of the large building and turning to your left will take you to the Bank of Fayetteville. Originally on the opposite corner, where David Adams Jewelry is now, the bank has expanded much over the years. So much so that the building to its south was purchased and made into offices. The top pitch of this white facade says 1887, the year the building was built. Underneath reads Mrs. Young. And as Charlie Allison, executive editor with University Relations at the University of Arkansas, and the creator of the website FayettevilleHistory.com, as he says, Mrs. Young was actually Sarah Jessie Young, She'd moved to the area about half a dozen years earlier with her husband at the time, a traveling dentist.
And I don't know what happened, but they got divorced in 1883. And so she took up the profession of photography to pay her bills and was a portrait photographer primarily, and was one of the early photographers in Fayetteville, working in the 1880s period and into the 1890s. And that's what paid for this building.
The front is a metal facing that could be ordered from catalogs at the time and came from an iron company out of St. Louis. Mrs. Young moved from the building in 1907, and the building was taken over by another photographer in town for a bit until it went on to serve other uses.
A grocery, a restaurant, a confectionery store over the years. At some point, though, it became Matilda's, which was a women's fashion shop, and operated as Matilda's for years and years and years through most of the 20th century. Near the end of the 20th century, the Bank of Fayetteville, which is next door, purchased the building.
I found it interesting that though she had divorced her husband years prior, she chose to engrave Mrs. Young on the building rather than Sarah Jessie Young, or just Young. This is something that Allison says is indicative of the time, that women went by Mrs. and the last name of their husband, even after a divorce.
Sometimes it's hard to do research on women from that period because they very often don't state their first name. They say Mrs. John Jones for nearly all of their correspondence, for anything that's, you know, in the public domain. Very often they don't use their first real name from a lot of period in the late 19th and 20th century. And so sometimes it's hard to do research on people who are women and were very traditional about how they identified themselves.
Mrs. Young was primarily a portrait photographer, and many of her pictures still exist at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History or special collections at the university. Do you think Mrs. Young had any idea at the time that 130 years later, her name would still be a staple on the Fayetteville Square?
The outside of it looks very much the same as it has for a century, and the Mrs. Young building even longer. You know, like you said, 130 years it's been here. And looked exactly the same way. They've kept it up, kept it looking pretty, and so anybody that comes by remembers it because it does look nice, and then the next time they come by, it's reinforced because they've seen it again, and it's still the same. You look at some of the other buildings on the square, some of them have really old buildings underneath facades that have been added to them.
Perhaps a bit less noticeable on the opposite corner of the square is a building currently housing the Odom Law Firm. Underneath the red Odom sign is a metal awning that bears the name Geisinger.
So this building is older than the Geisinger awning, though?
Yes. The building goes back to the 19th century again, too. Originally, if I remember right, it was a hardware store and operated as that until the Geisinger Music Company, which had started out on the east or on the west side of the square, decided to move into bigger facility. So they bought this property and had their music store here for most of the 20th century.
They sold pianos, guitars, ukuleles, and all manner of brass and woodwind instruments. And as times moved into the modern era, they began to sell electric guitars. This building is one of four that is on the National Register of Historic Places, including the Mrs. Young Building. Just off the square and down Center Street toward the historic Washington County Courthouse is an area that was known as Smoky Row for a period because all of the lawyers had their offices here and the lawyers all smoked cigars. Along Smoky Row is a second awning bearing a name, this one done in a tempered glass that reads Craven's Building. And though it does have the year of construction on the side, 1925, the building is obviously newer than others we've passed along the way. It's a newer kind of brick, for one.
In this case, a yellowish brick, but the cement is a harder, probably a Portland lime kind of cement. The Mrs. Young building, the Geisinger building, they used a lime putty to go in between the bricks. Some of that's been changed out over the years, but it gives you a sense of how old a building is by just looking at the materials used to build it.
The Craven's Building, built in 1925, and for many of those years thereafter, was used by McRoy McNair Company. They sold stationery, among other things.
I would go get my pen nibs for doing pen and ink writing or drawing. You could get all sorts of stuff there that you couldn't get anywhere else. But down below, in the basement, they had printing presses. Even until they closed, they still had linotype machines. They weren't using the linotype machines anymore, but they were so big and heavy they couldn't get them out until they closed.
McRoy McNair closed about 10 years ago and is sorely missed by some. The building now holds an Italian restaurant and a tea house. Today, it is rare to see a family or person name affixed permanently to a building if it isn't associated directly to a business. Allison isn't really sure why it was done all those years ago, but thinks to some degree the business name was less important than the person behind the business.
Because you knew the human being, you knew what kind of character that person had, and especially if you were trying to appeal to people to come use your services, your character, your ability to handle problems and deal with clients was more important than necessarily your company name. So I can imagine that having a real name, a human name on a building might be a what we would call a better branding now today, but at that time would have been just simply better to represent yourself to people.
He says he never really gets the sense that vanity was behind it, and it certainly didn't seem so with Mrs. Young. Charlie Allison is the editor of FayettevilleHistory.com. Once a month on Ozarks at Large, we feature an installment in our What's in a Name series, a look into the history or purpose of why something familiar or not is called what it is. If you have a name suggestion or any other suggestion, just email us, ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
It is Thursday, July 10th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
We're happy to have Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, back with us.
Thank you. And I'm happy to wrap up the little mini-series we've been doing on museums.
Yes.
The Fort Smith Museum of History has an interesting exhibit where you can see the Old West through the eyes of 18th and 19th century artists like, John James Audubon and George Catlin.
No.
It's called Imprinting the West, Manifest Destiny, Real and Imagined, curated by someone at the Met.
Oh.
It comes from Exhibits USA, and it includes 48 hand-colored lithographs and engravings that talk about the American West during the period of westward European expansion.
Well, what a perfect place.
Then
you can
yeah.
walk outside of the museum and kind of look to your left, and you're seeing it.
See the West.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to take note, as you just said, that Fort Smith was the edge of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was past the edge because St. Right. Louis was really the edge
exactly.
of civilization. So this is a really high quality and interesting exhibit. It will be around through August 10th, and admission is $2 to $5.
Okay.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I am an early morning passenger on the Empire Builder, heading west across the North Dakota Plains.
That's Joe Crookston singing the song Big Sky from his latest CD, Georgia, I'm Home. Joe, who wowed crowds last year during the Fayetteville Roots Fest, is back in Fayetteville this week. The Ithaca, New York resident is spending time here conducting songwriting workshops at the Fayetteville Public Library, and he'll deliver a free concert at the library Friday night at 7. There will also be a screening of a documentary inspired by a song of his called Blue Tattoo. That film will be shown tomorrow afternoon at 2 at the Fayetteville Public Library. Yesterday, Joe Crookston came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play a couple of songs, and we'll hear those tomorrow on OAL. But he also talked about the very song that inspired the documentary film.
I wrote a song called Blue Tattoo, and I wrote it in honor of my friend Dina Jacobson. And I wrote it for her when she was 86 years old. She was 92 years old. This film came out based on this song. And just 2 weeks ago, she passed away. The film came out, and she went to the premiere. Mm. And then she was like, I'm ready now. So, yeah, that film coming out has been a very important creative sort of outlet, I guess, for me, and I'm very proud of it. Yeah.
The song came first. You say she was your friend. Did she live near you?
She did. She just lived about 10 miles south of me in Elmira, New York. So I live in Ithaca, New York. Just head south to Elmira, and she lived there. She was Polish. She was in Auschwitz for 3 years. She traveled across the Atlantic on a boat with her four-year-old daughter, or with her daughter, I should say, young daughter. And they relocated to Elmira, New York. And the song is really, I wrote it for her, and it's a conversation between Connie, her daughter, and maybe Connie's 4 years old, and Dina is maybe 28 years old. And the four-year-old is asking questions of her mother, saying, "Tell me about your life, Mom," you know? And then the mother answers these questions. And through that, you realize that she had sailed across the Atlantic, relocated, and started over in America after being in Auschwitz. So then I recorded it. Some filmmakers heard the song and decided that they wanted to make a documentary based on Dina's life and around this song. And it's called Blue Tattoo.
I'm curious how you met her. How did you become friends?
I met her through a mutual friend of ours, Deborah Chessman, who is a Jewish woman in Horseheads down near Elmira, New York. She said, "I have a friend I want you to meet." And I was traveling. I received a grant to travel around the rural parts of New York State and interview people and collect stories and then write original songs. And this basically came from, you'd be interested in this, from a payola scandal that in New York State, there was this Sony BMG basically was paying DJs
right.
to play their artists. And it's called payola. Many people know what that is. And they were fined by Elliot Spitzer, who was the attorney general, and they were fined a certain amount of money and required to give it to New York State artists, musicians, to do projects. And I raised my hand and I said, "I want to be one of those," you know. So in a sense, that project, I traveled all through the Finger Lakes of New York and small towns and collected a lot of stories. And then I wrote songs based on those stories. And that's how I met Dina.
It's a story that may not have reached many people otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing with me as I love writing music and traveling, and I find the simplest way to put it is I love stories. I love people. I like to be kind of a social archaeologist. That's the way I think of it, is like digging into the fabric of America and finding stories that otherwise wouldn't be told. Because, you know, mass media, and we have a lot of, you know, similar stories being pumped out, right? And I'm interested in digging down in the cracks and finding stories that maybe wouldn't be otherwise told. And that's exciting to me as an artist. You know, it's maybe not the most hip and cool thing to do, but it's who I am, and it's true for me. And because of that, it's working.
Well, then what is it? What's the responsibility you feel? Because this, you're somewhat commissioned to create art and artistic work after talking to these people and hearing their stories. I would think there's a heavy sense of responsibility then, because you're taking their story and creating something with it.
Yeah, it's a
and
really...
And you want it to be...
Yes. Here's what I would say is that I never felt commissioned. It was really more of a support. It was more of, you're a New York State musician artist. We want to support you to live your dream and do what you want to do with your life. And that's really, that was the end of it. It wasn't a very overseen project. So for me, it was really a gift of being able to go out and have a little bit of support to do that while I did it. But the real pressure, I should say, came from within me, which was, I really want to be a great artist. And also, if you're getting into the territory of telling a woman's story from the perspective of being in Auschwitz for 3 years, you better, or I better, think long and hard about how I tell that story. So what was really important to me was that I was invisible. Joe Crookston, the songwriter, guy with guitar, was kind of invisible in the background. And that meant a lot to me. It took me about 8 months to write this song. And it wasn't a pressure coming from, oh, the commission or anything like that. It was more coming from me as an artist. I could have not written the song, and that would have been that. I could have done something different. But I chose to do it, and I stuck with it. And I ended up having the song be a conversation between Dina and Connie back and forth so that I, as the narrator, was invisible. I wasn't really telling their story. They were telling their own story through the questions.
The documentary based on Joe Crookston's song Blue Tattoo will be screened tomorrow afternoon at 2 inside the Fayetteville Public Library. While Joe was inside our studio yesterday, he also sang the song Blue Tattoo, and we'll hear the entire performance on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large, but here's a preview.
Yes, my darling, yes, I used to be little just like you. And yes, I played with all the other kids too. Yes, my darling, yes, I used to be little like you. Well, darling, in a Polish town halfway around the world is where I lived when I was just a girl. On a farm in a Polish town halfway around the world.
Joe Crookston inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, the entire song and another on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Joe Crookston will also perform a free concert Friday night inside the Fayetteville Public Library beginning at 7. And you can learn much more about Joe at his website, JoeCrookston.com.
Next time on Ask Me Another, our VIP Doug Lyman, director of Swingers, Born Identity, and Edge of Tomorrow, talks about working with one of Hollywood's biggest movie stars.
The only one that was more excited about killing Tom Cruise than me was Tom Cruise.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Game on.
Listen Saturday at 11 a.m. to 91.3 FM.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Greenland.
Greenland. Not the country, but the town.
Right.
Don't forget, you have a chance to win 4 passes to any Malco movie theater in the area, 4 vouchers to exchange for tickets to an upcoming Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball game of your choice, 4 tickets to the July 15th edition of Riff Tracks Live taking on Sharknado.
Okay.
And 2 tickets to the Fund Your Farmers 2014 event that includes local food from Chefs of 11, Greenhouse Grill, 28 Springs, Vetro 1925, and the Fayetteville Pastry Shop. This is sponsored by Ozark Slow Food. It takes place July 17th. All of that yours if you're the random name picked out. But in order to be the random name, you have to
email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. That's all you have to do is email.
That's right.
But you would like for people to maybe tell us their favorite song about the rain.
Right.
As we sit here on what is a dreary, rainy Thursday.
Yep.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnes.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette Grajeda.
That is correct. And you and I back together Sunday morning at 9.
That's right. Until then, thanks so much for listening. And we'll end with a song by the Anthony Ball Jazz Group. They're performing tomorrow night at the Fresco Cafe and Pub in downtown Fayetteville, where they have live music each and every Friday and Saturday evening.